Well, for those of you who are watching, you can see a familiar face on screen, Helen Ziller. We're going to be talking to her in just a moment. There's a lovely follow-up for an interview we had yesterday with Kathy Berman and Prince Josefa Buthelezi, fresh talents who will be heading for the Chambers of Lawmakers, the Parliament of South Africa. And the reason why I'm keen to talk to Helen is because in recent years, the Democratic Alliance has consistently drawn achievers from outside of politics onto those green leather benches. Think Glynis Breytenbach, Dr. Leon Schreiber, Michael Bachram, and this year, Ian Cameron. So Helen, I guess that's the story. We as the voters, we the people, love to see the best people possible in Parliament. It hasn't been the case for a while. You guys have done your best on this. How do you go about it, though? Do you sit around in the Federal Council? And just to remind people, Helen Ziller is the chair of the Federal Council of the Democratic Alliance. Do you sit around and say, there's Ian Cameron. He looks like the right kind of person for us. We'll go and tap him. Or what is the process first to identify talent?
Well, we have the most comprehensive and meritocratic process of any party. And our goal is to ensure that we bring the very best people to Parliament who are available. We put an enormous effort into that task. So Ian Cameron is one of our new faces, but we have a significant number across all the nine provinces and, of course, nationally as well. So we've put an enormous effort in this year, as we do every year, and we refine our process every year to get better and better. So yes, in between elections, we scout for talent. For example, the minute this year's election is over on the 30th of May, my mind will turn to the 2026 local government election. And I plan to go round to key towns across the whole of South Africa, and I will find the shakers and movers who often complain a lot about the circumstances, and with good reason, and I'm going to say to them, you don't have to complain now. You can actually do something about it. Stand for election, get in the ring, and do something. So we scout for talent all the time. And obviously, Ian Cameron was one of the talents that we spotted. And right back then, we approached him and asked him to consider putting in an application. So the very first stage of our nine-month, 10-part process, is a call for applications. And that goes far wider than the DA. We advertise and we say, if you'd like to be part of solving South Africa's problems, then please put your hat in the ring. Tell us what your attributes are. These are the attributes you have to meet if you want to be an MP or an MPL, a member of a provincial legislature. Go ahead. If you're good and if you meet these attributes, apply. And we get some really interesting new people from all over the place.
Well, it's a process that I guess would not be fully appreciated, because one, sitting on the outside, you think, well, if you want to be a member of a party, or if you've been a member of a party for a long time and you perhaps get rewarded by being put into Parliament or into a provincial legislature, particularly if you don't have terribly good prospects in whatever job you're doing at the time. It just, that seems to be most people's perceptions of where MPs come from.
Well, that is the case in many parties. Becoming an MP is like a gold watch for long service. You get to climb the ladder and it takes time. And eventually, irrespective of how good or not you are, you get into Parliament. Now, that is not how it works in the DA. In fact, we want all our incumbents to have a good run for their money. We want them to have the strongest possible competition that we can bring into the field, because we believe in competition. We believe that competition drives excellence. And if you know for your full five-year term that you're going to face tough competition in the next round, you're likely to put all of your effort into your role as an MP, as a constituency head, as a communicator, as a representative, as a legislator that you possibly can. And so our candidate selection process is very specifically designed to ensure that the poorest performers, who are current incumbents, don't return, and the very best of the new applicants come in. And in that way, we refresh. We maintain our best incumbents and we refresh with our best newcomers. And so we have the continuity and the new blood.
Sounds a bit like Jack Welch at General Electric. We used to fire 10% of the people every year. Hopefully you don't do that. But I guess when you're growing, when the party's growing, it's much easier to bring in new talent. How are things going internally at the DA looking ahead to election 25? There's any number of armchair critics who are saying you're going to get a hiding in the Western Cape or you're going to go down in a national sense. What's your feeling right now?
Well, internally in the DA, things are running at top-notch level. The DA is a machine. We're the blue machine, and we work very, very well together. And all the moving parts know where they fit in, and everyone gets on with what they have to do, knowing how they contribute to the rest. And it's exactly the same in our application process that, as I say, takes 9 months. I mean, I'd like to take you through that so that you can see how complex it is. First of all, there's the call for applications. Then there is the screening committee. Now, in that call for applications, Alec, we had about 1,200 applications. And eventually, we want to end up with 200 MPs and MPLs, right? And so what we have to do is lose 1,000 applicants along the way. That includes incumbents and newcomers. So the first thing that we do is have a screening committee. And the screening committee looks at all of the CVs that are submitted against the criteria that we set in the job description of an MP and an MPL. And you have to meet 5 out of the 7 criteria to go forward. So we lose several hundred at the first or the second stage, which is the screening committee stage. And being the DA, we allow a person to appeal at every stage of the process. So at any stage of the process, if you fall out, you can appeal to an independent panel to say you weren't fairly treated or the process wasn't right or whatever you feel was unfairly dealt with. Then the next step is the potential candidates program. Now, this is a step that people tend to be fearful of, but it is not as scary as it sounds. This is 4 invigilated exams with a lot of preparatory work, a lot, which deals with the country's constitution, the DA's constitution, the DA's history, our policies, and our broad principles and values. So there are 4 different invigilated exams, and the minimum pass mark across all 4 is 80%. So you have to do well to go forward, and of course we lose quite a number of people at that point. The next step is what they call the Electoral College. Now, the Electoral College is the state at which the branches and the constituencies have their say. So the branches and the constituencies elect people to go to the Electoral College. It's a big body. And every new candidate has to appear before an Electoral College. They arrive there. They have 10 minutes to prepare an unseen speech that they have to deliver before the Electoral College and then face a raft of questions that they have to answer on their feet. And that is to test your ability to give an impromptu speech as well as to answer questions on your feet. And those answers have to be aligned to the DA's policies, principles, and values. And obviously, we lose quite a number of people there. The top 25% before the Electoral College go through, the bottom 25% fall out, and the middle 50% gets ranked to create the final pool. Then if you're a sitting public representative, you can't go any further unless you get a duly performance certificate. And the duly performance certificate is the consequence of 5 years of performance evaluations against all the yardsticks that would make you a good MP or MPL. And if you didn't do well enough, you don't get your duly performance certificate and you can't go further, which means then you are out. The next one is the fit for purpose test. This is a very excellent one. It's kind of based on the Harvard model. We have a whole lot of case studies. And then we ask our candidates, what would you do in these circumstances? And we can then see if they can respond from a perspective of the DA's values and principles. And then we also have a test on the job of an MP or an MPL, what that job comprises, the sphere of government they're applying for, what its role is, what it does, et cetera, et cetera. Then the next step is the selection panel, which ranks the pool, the final pool. There you arrive again. It's much smaller than the Electoral College, but you arrive again. You get 10 minutes to prepare a 5-minute speech on an unseen topic and then answer questions both on the speech you've delivered and on other aspects that we want to measure in terms of all our candidates. And then finally, it goes, all the scores are collated from all the different sources, goes back to the selection panel for ratification, and the final review and ratification to the relevant executive, which in this case, because it's a national and provincial election, is the federal executive. So that is the process, and that is how we spend 9 months managing the process. And in fact, interestingly enough, I stay in a place where there are quite a number of retired professors from UCT. And one of the professors mentioned to my husband that he had a PhD student who was a very good student, and he had put his hat in the ring to be an MP for the DA, and he'd never faced such a grueling process in all his studies right up to his PhD as he faced in the DA. So we do pick the very best for you to serve them.
I'm so glad you went through that, because it's hopeful when you see people like Cathy Inns and Prince Buthelezi going to Parliament for their parties. But it was never really I never tested with them how they got there. I think from Cathy's point of view, she said she's been working with Musi for 2 years, and from Prince Buthelezi's point of view, well, his dad was the leader of the IFP, so he's been hard boiled in the party. But the way you've explained it now, it sounds more like a corporation than a political party. It's more like serious job interviews before you finally get the job.
Well, it is. And it's much tougher than most corporations. And the purpose is that the DA is not just a party of opposition anymore. We're a party of government. We govern a province, and we govern a whole swath of local governments across the country. And government is hard. Being in government and doing a good job is very, very hard. You've got to have the intellect. You've got to have the emotional intelligence. You've got to have the ability to read through huge amounts of documentation and read for meaning. You've got to be able to interpret it. You've got to take decisions on the hoof. You've got to be able to communicate with the media. And you've got to be held accountable and pass legislation and do a whole range of things. It is difficult. And all of this is in the middle of public glare, of spotlights on you, of 1,000 people who all think they know the job better than you do and who have all got criticisms all the time. That is the name of the game. It is brutal. And we have to pick people who have got all those attributes who will be able to stand the pace.
It's a pity that the voters don't take more account of that, I guess, because we, as the voters on the outside, don't really know, particularly with the current system of proportional representation, who our MPs are. You, of course, know the Helen Zillers and the John Steenhuisens and the Cyril Mapozas, but what about the guys who are voting, the people who are making the difference to the laws, those who voted for the NHI, for instance? It's a shame that more of this is, that they're not better exposed.
Well, we do our very best to build the profile of our MPs, especially our shadow ministers, who all have very important portfolios to run. And every single constituency across the country, and we divide the entire country into constituencies, has a DA MP or MPL or councillor that is responsible for that constituency. Now, we are strongly in favor of electoral reform. We believe there should be a combined list and constituency-based system, 200 from each, so that you get the direct representation element, but you can also prevent gerrymandering by having the percentage balance on the proportional list system. And that combination, which was first proposed by Frederick Francel Slubbert originally when he proposed that electoral system, is one with a few amendments that the DA still supports.
been a good conversation, but I think there are a few things going on at the moment that we must touch on. I spoke with Gayton McKenzie earlier this week. He says he's offering an olive branch. Are you accepting it?
Well, you see what he did today, Alec. He went and started his own multi-party charter, whatever he's trying to do, with a whole lot of parties who support the ANC in various governments, especially the Karoo governments. And he's been on the record as saying that he's not finished with the ANC yet. He has a lot of work still to do with the ANC and one other party at national level, and we have no doubt that that one other party is the EFF. So what Gayton does for PR and what Gayton does for power are two very, very different things. We've been let down by Gayton multiple times when he's promised us all sorts of things. And, you know, they say, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. But no one fools us eight times.
And his vociferous view that the Western Cape is not going to be ruled by the DA at the end of May, after the end of May. What are your polls telling you on that?
It's up to the voters whether or not they wish to get the only functional and working province back into the fold of the ANC. That's the issue in the Western Cape. Do they want to take the one province that works for everyone, where clean water is delivered, where toilets flush properly, where load shedding is going down, where we have literally world-class healthcare in many of our public facilities, and where education is steadily improving? Do voters want to take that and hand it over to Gayton and the ANC and the EFF? Or do they want to continue progress under the DA? That is the crisp choice for Western Cape voters in this election. And by pushing the DA below 50%, they open the door for a coalition between the ANC, the EFF, and Gayton McKenzie. And he has said, in trying, actually ironically, to get one of our councillors to cross the floor with a promise of being number four on his list, because Gayton McKenzie has no entry requirements, it is just purely extortion and bribery behind the scenes to get people away from other parties, he said to him, that is the plan, that is what their plan is after the election, and he offered him position four on the list. Our councillor wasn't having any of it, and I think very intelligently and rightly so. So as I've set out the process that the DA follows, Gayton says quite openly he's a dictator. He calls himself a benevolent dictator. I leave the adjective out. And he decides who's on the list, who's not on the list, and he changes from week to week.
And the other guy who would like to be a dictator, because he's even said so in public, Jacob Zuma, he's back in the fold. As a human being, you know him well, and I recall us chatting once about him. He's a very pleasant human being. But the fact that he's back in politics, and given his track record, is this something that we as South Africans should be concerned about? Are you?
I am concerned about it. Jacob Zuma is personally a pleasant, friendly, warm human being. His understanding of constitutionalism and the rule of law is close to non-existent. He still today really genuinely, I think, believes he did nothing wrong. He was only applying BEE with the Guptas, etc., etc. And in a way, that is exactly how the ANC's form of BEE can be applied. So I get his logic there. But I was once called a racist for saying Jacob Zuma is a traditionalist who still sees things in terms of traditional governance systems. But it happens to be the truth, so I don't mind being called names for telling the truth. And he saw himself as president, as the king of South Africa, who could do what he liked, receive whatever gifts he liked, give any permissions he liked, and have the final say on everything. And he was still genuinely, genuinely puzzled as to why the Constitution didn't allow it. And that is the great risk of Jacob Zuma. He has eaten deeply into the IFP's support base. And the IFP, as you know, is part of the multi-party charter and would have brought us a good hunk of votes, which we really need. And that was very important for us. But as a Zulu traditionalist, Jacob Zuma knows very well how to communicate with that constituency and draw them in. And his track record of corruption and state capture and selling the country out to the Guptas actually doesn't touch sides. It's an argument that doesn't cut very deeply in some constituencies who are looking to vote on an identity basis.
Yeah, it kind of baffles the mind when you think of South Africa from a different perspective. What happened on the 12th of December 2015, where Zuma sent Des van Rooyen into the National Treasury to take over the Guptas and one of the Gupta sidekicks. And if you think about that happening in many societies, the person who instigated that would just not be allowed back in again. But I guess, as you say, it doesn't really resonate in a particular constituency. But when we look into KZN and what could happen there in future, have you got any scenarios, given that you've got a really strong candidate in Chris Pappas as the premier? If, for instance, he doesn't become premier, does he then come? Can he go to parliament? Would that be an option?
He's number one on our list, so he can certainly go to the provincial legislature. He's not on the national parliamentary list, but he's on the provincial legislature list. And I certainly think he will give all the other parties a good run for their money. He is a very good candidate. He's very intelligent. He's very able. He's very steeped in the culture and traditions of the province. And he has a very big following. He won a 73% black municipality for us, which was spectacular. And he won it by 42 votes. A win is a win, which shows you that every vote counts. And we've got every confidence that Chris will enable us to do as best we possibly can in KwaZulu-Natal. And of course, the ANC is crumbling there. So the ANC is crumbling between MK, that's Zuma's party, and the EFF and the ANC and several other parties. And as they crumble, if we want to make sure stability and progress is still possible, we have to consolidate behind the DA. And that is what we're asking all moderate, non-racial voters to do, to consolidate behind the DA.
Helen, final question, because it's also the big one at the moment. Coalition government is so new for South Africa. It'll be a first time probably, well, I don't know, in centuries, apart from the little pact government that we had 100 years ago, where we've had coalitions in South Africa. And there's a lot of armchair specialists saying that the DA is going to get into bed with the ANC because that's the way coalition governments work, etc. How are you looking at this? Just maybe give us a ABC of how coalitions will work and where the DA, is there pressure inside the DA to desperately get into governing the country now in one way or another?
Let me say that the DA has processes and systems, and no individual at this stage, least of all me, can get up and say what the DA will be doing. My job is to make sure the blue machine runs smoothly, and that is what I do every single day with some very good people like Liana van Wyk, who's our chief operating officer, and others. So we have systems and processes, and we will work through those systems and processes to look at all the options. Now, how coalitions work is this. When no party gets over 50%, various parties look around for partners to take them above 50%, if that is possible, in that particular legislature. Now, in 1999, I was involved in my first coalition in the Western Cape. That first coalition, no party got above 50%. We were the DP at that stage. And you may remember that the DP went into a coalition with the NNP, the New National Party. And I don't know if you remember the hullabaloo and outcry that resulted from that. People wanted us to go into a coalition with the ANC, and Francois Slabbert had even said, I'll be your premier candidate if you go into coalition with the ANC. And we said, no, we're not giving yet another province back to the ANC. It's not going to happen. And we said, even though we spent our lives fighting the NNP, the time has come now to make sure that the ANC does not get 9 out of 9 provinces. Our role as Democrats is to prevent that. And so we did, and the hullabaloo eventually died down. Then we had our next coalition in 2006. By that stage, the DA had split, the NNP had left us, they had gone off to the ANC, they'd taken the city off us, And we got the city back on a coalition of seven parties. That was my next coalition. Now, in that coalition, when no party got above 50%, we were the biggest party, we had 42%. We could have easily done a two-party coalition with the Independent Democrats. And that would have taken us to over 50% because they got 11%. But the Independent Democrats did not want to do a deal with us. They wanted to go with the ANC, which was fatal for them. The ANC had only got 38%. The Independent Democrats had 11%. So they couldn't make it with the Independent Democrats. But we got six other parties to take us to just under 50%, and then the PAC abstained so we could just get 50%. So this is what happened in that particular coalition. Now, it was much more difficult to run than the simple two-party coalition we had in the NNP in the province. A seven-party coalition is an absolute nightmare, but we managed to see it through. And eventually, because they suffered so much at the polls, the ID came over to us and they became a coalition. And then Patricia Little joined us. If you recall, I think it was in 2011. So then we had a stable coalition. We won the province outright in 2009. And that was another kettle of fish entirely. When you get an overall majority, oh, what a joy. You've put your manifesto to the public. You've put it in a plan, the integrated development plan at local level or a strategic plan at provincial level. You put a budget to it. You manage performance. You manage the process and you get results. And that's what you can do when you get an overall blue majority. You can govern and govern well and really have results that show.
So outside of that kind of majority, which does not look likely in the national government, you might be faced with what you had to go through with the coalitions in the past. But really, my question of how strong is the pressure within the DA, you've been opposition for 30 years, to become part of governing nationally?
Well, we are a party of government, and obviously we're not going to want to be in opposition everywhere. Our aim was through coalitions, especially the MPC, that's why we formed the MPC, to see if we could just push and get Gauteng as a coalition government through the MPC. And KwaZulu-Natal, that would have been a fantastic result. Jacob Zuma has shaken things up a bit in KwaZulu-Natal and in Gauteng, frankly, where he's eaten into the IFP support base. So we've got a big challenge there, but the broad idea was that we'd become a party of government in some more provinces, and that is what we are seeking to do and putting all our effort behind. If we fall, if the ANC falls below 50% nationally, which it's very likely to do, the big question is, by how much will it fall below 50%? And when no party gets 50%, what happens then is that the decision-making structures of the DA sit down. They look at all the permutations. There's never just one permutation. There is a number of permutations that you can look at and do the pros and the cons and the scenario analysis, et cetera, et cetera. I'm very convinced that, like we've seen in Ekurhuleni and Johannesburg and Mogale City, that these unstable coalitions are very, very bad for governance and for stability and for service delivery in particular. But as I say, the DA is likely to look at every single option. And there'll be no good options, because the only good option is when the DA wins an outright majority. That is a good option. It's best for the country. It's best for service delivery. It's best for the economy. It's best for investment. It's best for job creation. It's best for education, for health, for all the other provincial competencies. But we're not going to get the best nationally, although it would be very nice if we could, because then we could really rescue South Africa. But we'll look at all the permutations and decide which is the least bad or the least worst, as I often say, for South Africa.
Helen Zille, when we were at the BizNews conference a little while ago, we had a 45-minute after-dinner chat, which went on for an hour and a half. We usually do these interviews for 20 minutes. It's gone on for half an hour, but it's been fascinating as always. Helen is the chair of the Federal Council of the Democratic Alliance, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.